Welcome to this episode of Out of the Best Books, the podcast where we deep dive into classic literature and have conversations about what we've learned and discovered along the way. We love all things books and reading, and we want to share our love of the classics with you. We hope to inspire you to read along with us and join in the conversation. I'm Laura.
And I'm Amity. Let's get started.
We're so excited today to talk about our top 10 books of 2023. I want to know if this was hard for you to figure out and come up with.
It was super hard. It was really fun, though, to go back and look at everything, because I was like, oh, I forgot about that one. I was like, man, I read some really, really good books this year. I read some that were not as good, but I read some really good ones. And so it was very, very difficult to narrow it down. But I went with the ones that when I looked at them, I was like, yes, I totally remember that one. And that's not one that I'm like, oh, I forgot I read that. Now I remember that one because it stands out.
I feel like it was easy to pick the 10, but then it was hard for me to put them in order. The ones that I read at the beginning of the year tend to be lower on my like top 10.
Okay.
Because it's been a while.
Yeah. I'm kind of all over the place that way. Because I think probably one of my top ones is one that I read in January, but I'm kind of all over the place. So it just depends on when I look at it and I think about it, I'm like, how does it make my body feel? Like, how much did it impact me that way? And that's where I rank it. So how many books did you read this year? Of course, we do have a few more weeks in 2023, so we can probably all read a couple more, but
I don't think I was perfect about writing them down.
See, I was not either. So I'm not sure that I got all of them, but this is my best guess.
And I'm really disappointed in the number.
I kind of was too, actually, but busy lives, whatever. It's fine.
36.
Okay.
That's low for me, actually.
I know it is. Because you're usually like in the 70s, right?
Yeah.
60s and 70s.
This happened this last couple of weeks. I'll finish a book and maybe I had three really good books in a row, really good. And then I just don't know what to read. So I'll spend a couple of days listening to podcasts or music. And this time of year, my reading slows down because I like to listen to Christmas music a lot.
Yeah.
And I have a hard time tearing myself away from it.
That's how I am. Especially the past little while, I found myself kind of going through a phase where I'm like, I just want to let my brain go and just listen to music. So yeah, that's kind of going through a phase. But
yeah, how many did you read?
65.
See?
65. But remember that I also include the books that I read aloud to my kids. And so I always have a few books going. So I don't know if that's really fair, but I have to go back and look. But I think my goal was like 75 or 80 or something. So not quite there.
So, and in my mind, I think that I listen to about one book a week. But
I know.
I'm actually
like really surprised at your number because you always have a new book to share on the podcast. So I'm betting that maybe you didn't keep track of all of them.
I know. Because I'm thinking about like one book, at least one book I read that isn't on there and I can't remember the name of it. And I just don't think I've been very good about keeping track. I don't know. Next year, I have new plans next year. So yeah, I think I'm going to make sure that I listen to one book a week. I used to start a book on Monday and I would just wouldn't let myself listen to anything else until I had finished it. And so I might do that. And this year I've just been listening to books when I'm working, like in an office. And that's not very much, actually. So
yeah,
I think that's what I'm going to do is just like start a book on Monday, just finish it. And then I'll let myself listen to podcasts or something for the rest of the week. So anyways, I think that's my plan. Yeah, and you kind of listen sporadically, right? Like whatever you're doing, you'll turn on a book.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, whether that's driving or dishes or laundry or which there's always a lot or cleaning or even like sometimes when I'm at work, I'll have about an hour before any kids come. And so I'm like cleaning toys or preparing a craft. And so I'm listening then. And when you're on double time, that means that you get in quite a bit of listening.
Yeah, I'm going to change things up because obviously I didn't do as good this year. I'm just not happy with it. It's not like I have this goal, like I have to read 150 books.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just like 36 is not very many. And I don't know how I shared a book every week.
I really think maybe you didn't record all of them, because not only would you share a book every week, you would often talk about another one that you had just finished, but that you weren't going to talk about.
I'm just,
I bet you have one.
Bad at keeping track. So, and that actually includes the books we read for the podcast.
It does include those. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so, my 65 includes the books for the podcast too. Oh, actually, I didn't write down Mere Christianity. 66.
I don't know. I try to write down the title, the author, and the date I finished it.
Yeah.
But like, do you want to start or do you want me to start? I'm going to go backwards. Is that okay?
Starting at 10?
Yep.
Yeah. I think we should do that.
So my number 10 book is something that I feel like is kind of out of my wheelhouse. Like, it's not something I typically like to read, but all of these I've talked about on the podcast. So it's just a repeat, right? The Mostly True Story of Tanner and Louise by Colleen Oakley. This one just kind of like fun, light.
I remember you talking about it.
Yeah, it was just different than what I normally read. And so it's about a girl who's 21 and she needs a place to live. And if I remember right, she had gotten injured. She was like an athlete and she'd gotten injured. And so like basically her life plan was kind of thrown out the window. So she spends all day, every day playing video games. And so she has nothing. So somebody gets her a job taking care of this older lady. And this older lady is not happy about having somebody live with her, take care of her. But it ends up that the lady has like a past, and she is kind of coming out that in the news that this is something had happened, and they're trying to find this person that was responsible. And so she runs off, and the girl goes with her because she's like, you know, she shouldn't go by herself. Somebody needs to take care of her. And I think it comes out that she's very sick. She has some kind of a disease and she's hiding it from everybody. Anyways, they just go on this wild adventure like Thelma and Louise, I guess.
Okay.
So it's really cute.
That's so fun.
And they like get to know each other and start to like each other. And they basically travel across the United States like in a car that's really old and people are after them. It's kind of cute.
That's cool. And it just sounds fun.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. It was just entertaining, light and fluffy. And I just remember like really liking it. Not life-changing, just good.
Just fun. Yeah, and you're glad that you read it. Okay, my number 10 is The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind. All of mine are pretty serious. I'm looking at them like, oh, they're all like kind of heavy and serious. The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind by William Kamkwamba. And it is the true story of William. He just was so tenacious and so determined to bring electricity to first his home and then his little village in Africa. Very inspiring, very difficult. Like, they go through so much. They have a drought and a famine, and you see how their government is just not good. You know, lots of people starve, and it's difficult. It's very difficult, but great book, very inspiring. And this is one that I read to my kids, actually. And I believe that this version is maybe adapted, so it's a little more child friendly. It's still a pretty thick book, and it does go into some heavy stuff, you know, like with the famine and drought and stuff. But it was excellent. Very good. And I think it's really important and good to read to children because it helps them to see and understand the importance of education and all that we are blessed with, but also teaching them tenacity and determination and stick-to-itiveness, and that they can accomplish hard things. So very good.
You know, I think that's one I want to read.
Yeah.
But I would enjoy it, right?
Yeah, definitely. Like, even this one that supposedly the children's version, I think it tells the story so well, and it's not dumbed down. It's not dumbed down. I think, I'm guessing they may have taken some things out of it that are maybe a little heavier, but it was still pretty heavy.
We're supposed to read The Orphan Keeper for January. And like, I downloaded one on Hoopla and I was like, okay, I'm going to listen to it. And then I was like, this is the young readers edition. So I don't know if I should just go with it or if I should try to get the actual one. But you picked the children's one on purpose.
Well, so let me grab it real quick. It's not like, yeah, it's the young readers edition of the New York Times bestseller. I got this one because it was part of our geography curriculum, because it's talking about Malawi in Africa. And so we're learning about that whole area of Africa.
It still looks thick.
It is. It's quite thick. So it's like 300 pages. Anyway.
And your kids liked it?
Yeah, they did. They really liked it a lot. In fact, we like two books at the same time. One was for history, one was for geography. And I'd be like, hey, which one do you want to start with? They'd always wanted to start with that one.
So my number nine is Go As a River by Shelley Reed. This reminded me of, and is like set, you know, the publisher said it was similar to Where the Crawdads Sing and The Four Winds. Anyways, it was really good. So this woman lives in Colorado. She runs her family's peach farm. Well, she's the only female that survived. So like her brother and her mom were killed in a car accident. And so she's basically now there with her dad and her uncle, I think. They are going to come in and like the state or the city or whatever is going to come in and like tear everything up. And so they're forcing them to leave the peach farm. And so she ends up meeting this guy that she really likes. She gets pregnant, something happens to him. And so she's forced to like, because she's pregnant with his baby who, you know, she's not married. I'm pretty sure that's what I feel so awful because it's like, is that what happens? Anyways, she kind of runs off into the like wilderness and like lives in this little hut for a while. So that's how it's kind of like Where the Crawdads Sing. Something happens to her boyfriend who she's just, it's like he's like the love of her life, right? She's just so happy to be with him. So she has to figure out what to do. So she runs out into the wilderness and lives out there for a while. And then eventually, I've mentioned this before, I really love books where there's like a strong female character who's like, I'm not putting up with this. I'm going to do better. And I'm going to fix my life. That's how she is. And it's just, if you read it, you'll want to eat peaches too. Because they sound very delicious.
I always want to eat peaches.
Have you ever had peaches with, did you never know Toni Wygant?
No.
So she was.
That name is very familiar. Maybe people talked about
her. She lived in our ward when Charlie was a little boy. So it's been a while. But they had a peach tree in their backyard. And she taught me to drizzle sweetened condensed milk on them.
Oh.
Oh my gosh. Ooh. We always ate peaches as a kid for breakfast. Peaches and milk. And then my mom would put like sugar on them, which I never thought they needed sugar. But peaches and sweetened condensed milk.
I bet.
It's like the most delicious. Sounds really good. So be prepared if you read that to want to eat peaches.
Want peaches? Okay. Well, it's funny because my number nine is actually The Four Winds by Kristen Hanna. So you said that your book was sort of like a combo of that one and Where the Crawdads Sing, which is another of mine. But anyways, so I can see how it would be because The Four Winds takes place over a period of several years, but it starts in 1921 and it starts out in Texas. And there's this young woman, Elsa. Her family thinks basically that she's kind of a weakling and that she's too old to get married. And she kind of stays inside all the time. And then she goes out and she meets this young Italian guy. Like he's quite a bit younger than her, actually. And she gets pregnant. And that changes the course of her life. Her family pretty much disowns her. So she goes to live with this Italian family. Her husband kind of turns out to just be a dork, but her in-laws are amazing. And she has a couple of children. And then we, you know, jump forward to the Great Depression and they're living right in the Dust Bowl. And it's just awful. Like her description of these dust storms that come in, you just feel yourself suffocating. Kristen Hanna does an amazing job of really taking you there. She heads to California, as so many people do. And so their trip there and their time there. And this is a very strong female lead. It's wonderful. Like there's a lot of sad. There's a lot of triumph. There's a lot of just like, oh my gosh, do it, you know, get it, girl. Like it's very inspiring, very strengthening. And also again, very tragic. Something I wrote in my notes when I did write it down was it did remind me of The Grapes of Wrath a lot. And I felt like it was sort of a modern take so you could understand, because The Grapes of Wrath is a great book. I think it's very large and very long, and a lot of times it's maybe not as accessible to a lot of people. So this one kind of gives you that same idea, slightly different story, but extremely similar setting, similar themes. So excellent. Very, very good book.
John Steinbeck. I remember that book very well. And I love the way Kristen Hanna, she does write really good female characters. I just remember like, you're just rooting for that woman the whole time because she just has such a hard life. Just beat down and beat down. And
yeah, setback after setback after setback.
And that was the book that I learned what Okies were.
Yeah.
Like, my dad used to use that term. And then now I was like, oh, that's funny. From the Dust Bowl. Okay, this might be on your list too. My number 8 was I Must Betray You by Ruta Sepetys. Is that on your list?
It's not, but it certainly could be. That's
so good.
I kind of have a list of honorable mentions. Maybe we could talk about
them. That's a good idea.
Honorable mentions. So, so good. Yes.
Yes. So she writes for, I would say, middle grade, young teenagers, probably. That's like her genre. And it's always historical fiction. Just so good. So well researched. She tries to find places that are like you wouldn't really know about. This book was so good. It says it's a historical thriller about communist Romania. What's shocking about this to me is you're reading it and then you're like, this is 1989.
Yeah. Just yesterday, basically.
Yes. I was 10. Yeah. I remember being 10 and thinking, I had no idea this was going on the other side of the world. Just shocking. It's about this little boy in Romania. They're not allowed to be like to voice their opinions, right? And this little boy dreams of becoming a writer, but they're just not free to do that. So they have all these rules and they have it set up so everybody's spying on everybody. And yeah. So you can't trust anyone. You don't know.
Literally no one. You don't know if your sister is spying on you, your mom has been spying on you, or your best friend.
Like he has this friend who is, his dad works for the U.S. Embassy. And so they ask him to spy on him. I remember him thinking, like, being so surprised at what this little boy from the U.S. had and how the little boy would talk about things at home. And the guy's like, oh my gosh, you had food in your refrigerator. You could drink soda. You could walk down to the movies and watch a movie. Anyways, so fascinating. So basically, he lives in his home with his like mom and his dad and his grandpa and his sister. And you don't know who's spying on who, but basically they're all spying on each other.
They're all spying on each other. And it all kind of comes out in the end. And
yeah, it's fascinating. And I think the most fascinating thing is when it was happening.
Yeah, I think that was kind of my theme this year is like reading these very heavy books about different time periods and things that all the stuff that we maybe haven't known as much about until now, because finally it's coming out. And that kind of leads into my number 8, which is also by Ruta Sepetys. Cause that was the thing. Like I had several by the same authors and I was like, I can't do all of them. So just in talking about these books, I'm also recommending the author themselves. So this is The Fountains of Silence by Ruta Sepetys. And I read this one because my 7th grader was needing to read it for, so like you said, she does write a lot for young adults, teenagers. And so he was needing to read this for his language arts class. I mean, we homeschool, but that was his curriculum. And so I read it with him. It was just excellent. So it takes place in Spain, starting in 1957. And so this is something that, yeah, like I didn't know about. A lot of people did not know about it because it was under the fascist dictatorship of Francisco Franco. They were basically taking all these babies of people that they considered basically undesirables, people that they didn't consider good Spanish citizens. And they would tell them, oh, they're sick, or oh, they died, you know, right after you gave birth to them. But they were actually like adopting them out to other families that they thought would raise them in the fascist way. So they found that that happened to something like 300,000 babies. It's just a very difficult, awful time. And this young American kid comes over. And he's a photographer and he's actually the son of a very wealthy tycoon. But if he takes the picture of a wrong thing, like his camera's confiscated, but he forms a relationship with Anna. This relationship goes over like many years and they're like reunited many years. It's like, it's actually like an incredible history story and lesson about Spain and all that it went through. And eventually those Francisco Franco and his wife, I believe that they are killed, like they're executed because of all the nasty things that they did to people. Daniel, who's the young American guy, and Anna are eventually reunited over many after many years. And anyway, sweet love story, but great history lesson too.
I own that, but I have not read it. And I don't know why I haven't read every Ruta Sepetys because I just love
it. I know. So good. And this is one that, I mean, a lot of times I just listen to books, but I think this one was probably like months and months of waiting. And so I did read the physical book. It was a very good read.
Okay. I'm on number seven. My number seven is Lighthouse Bay by Kimberly Freeman. And I love Kimberly Freeman. She just writes so well. I think she's an Australian author. Oh, so good. This is the second book I've read by her. And the first one was so good. I can't remember what it was called. But this is about two love stories in this little seaside town of Australia called Lighthouse Bay. So the first story is in 1901, a ship sinks. And only one survivor, and they think there's no survivors, but this lady had turned up on an island and doesn't want to say who she is. But she had basically been in a loveless marriage and had recently lost her son. Like, she had given birth to a son, and then he had died very shortly after he was born, like within a month. And her husband was just super unsympathetic to it and was like, you shouldn't still be sad. This is ridiculous. She turns up on this island, and what she has with her, though, is on the ship there was this gift meant for the Australian Parliament. It's in this box, and everybody thinks that this thing, this expensive piece of jewelry, had fallen. I think it was like a stone, it wasn't a piece of jewelry, had fallen into the ocean with the ship, but she has it. So it's very interesting. Like, she thinks that possibly this thing that she has could be like her way of getting out from under the family. Like, she doesn't want them to know that she survived, and so she kind of like changes her name and makes a little life for herself on this island. But then this other woman, and so like it goes back and forth between that 1901 and then 100 years later, this other lady leaves her home in Paris and goes to Lighthouse Bay. She is living in this little cottage that the man she was having an affair with bought for her, but he had just died. So she's living in this little cottage on Lighthouse Bay. And so her sister lives in the town. Something had happened with her like 20 years earlier, and they hadn't spoken again. And she's kind of finding out about the lady that was there 100 years ago, and then also like healing the relationship with her sister. And just so good.
Wow. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
It sounds really intriguing. Super good.
She's cool. A really good writer. I'm like super impressed. I like that kind of stuff where I like dual timelines. Do you like that? Where, yeah, like,
I do, okay, too.
It's like a little break. Like, okay, now we're going to go to the story. Okay, now we're going to go back to that story.
Yeah, it keeps you very engaged. I do enjoy those a lot. Okay, so my number seven is Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver. Again, like I said, I'm looking at all mine. I'm like, they're all like kind of heavy themes and topics. So where I feel like the Four Winds was sort of Kristen Hannah's modern version of The Grapes of Wrath, Demon Copperhead is sort of Barbara Kingsolver's modern version of David Copperfield by Charles Dickens. And so where in David Copperfield, Charles Dickens is really trying to talk about institutional poverty and, you know, children being forced to work in factories and just like how awful the scene was there in London and England in general, and a lot of places, especially for children and for poor families. Barbara Kingsolver is bringing attention to these areas of America where there's just like this cycle of poverty, of drug abuse, of teen pregnancy, of these broken families. There's just no expectation. And it's very, tons of abuse, awful abuse. And it's very difficult to read. It's not a fun thing to read, but it's also like, but this is real. It does happen. It's, you know, also kind of addressing the foster system. So it takes place in Appalachia. I'm not sure how to say it because I've always said it Appalachia and I've heard people say Appalachia, whatever. And this boy who's called Demon Copperhead, he's in this cycle. Like, his mom, she has so many issues. She's addicted to drugs. She was pregnant when she was a teenager, and she's in and out of these very abusive relationships. He's eventually taken to foster care, which is like just as, if not more abusive than, you know, living with his mom and her boyfriends, because apparently his dad was this decent guy, but he died. And so he's able to eventually like find his grandma, who puts him with this football coach, and the football coach himself has lots of issues, but Demon Copperhead, he has a gift for football. He's really, really athletic, but then he gets into drugs and sex, and his girlfriend like dies from drug overdose. I mean, just one thing after the other. It's like he's making progress and you're like, oh, you're doing so good. And then he just like backtracks because of the drugs and the like the serious addiction. And so it just gives you a picture of what a lot of people is, it's their reality, you know? I think in a lot of ways it's a controversial book, and I've seen a lot of people go, why does anyone like this? Well, I don't think it's meant for you to like it. Just, I don't think that Charles Dickens wrote David Copperfield for people to like it. He was making a social statement and he was trying to bring attention to something. And I think that that's what she was doing.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I loved this book. And I'll, that I have one like that too. It's like, but it's important.
Yeah.
You don't really enjoy the experience of reading it.
Yeah. Other than that, it's extremely well written. And the entire, I mean, it draws you in and you're just like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And you're just kind of sick the whole time. But she's an excellent writer.
Yeah, it just feels weird to say, I loved it. It's like,
yeah. Didn't love it. It's just, but it, but I did love it.
It was well written and you feel like, you feel changed by it. I think sometimes that's what happens.
Absolutely. I think so. I think so. It was transformative in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So as you're reading these great, important books, I'm reading like fluff. Some. I'm going to get a mix. So the next one I just talked about on the podcast, because I just kind of finished it, but The Things You Save in a Fire by Catherine Center. I just discovered her this year. I've heard of her before, but like, this is the first year I've read anything by her, and so good. Entertaining. Like, if you want something that's like not terribly fluffy, but just entertaining and good, I think she's a great choice. I mean, I just talked about this, but this lady is a firefighter. I can't remember where she is originally, but she's really good. She's like a paramedic and she's, you know, set up to become the fire chief or whatever, you know, get promoted. Okay. But she has an experience with this congressman, like at a dinner where she freaks out on him and yells at him and stuff. And so they have to transfer her out because
they're like, kind of loses her.
Yeah, you can't stay here. Like, that was just ridiculous. Well, you later find out why she had this experience with him, and it was like well deserved what she did. Anyways, this guy is just horrible. Her mother is going blind, and her mom lives in Boston. And so her mom, who left her on her 16th birthday, left her and her dad to marry some other guy. And so she just doesn't have a really good relationship with her mom. She feels like, you abandoned us. And, you know, on my birthday.
Like, of all the days.
Yes. And you find out later why she did, why that happened on her birthday, and like how her mom was in a hard spot. And anyway, so you just kind of learn about her mom. And so she goes to Boston. They don't want a female firefighter there.
Oh.
And so they are just super mean to her, and she ends up, somebody is stalking her and leaving awful notes. And anyways, there's so much to this, I can't even like explain. She falls in love with one of the firefighters, and there's a lot to this story. It's very good. But you really learn like about her relationship with her mom, and like why this person in the firehouse is so against her being there. And it just kind of all comes together in the end.
Interesting, because it sounds like there's always a backstory. Like, it's not, you just don't take things at face value. That's kind of cool.
And I, even when her mom explains it, I'm like, I'm not really sure that's 100% justified.
Yeah.
But
in her mind, it may have been.
Yeah. And she does heal a relationship. Things turn out well for her. So very good.
So my number six is Where the Crawdads Sing by Delia Owens. And I feel like this one is very popular and most people know about it. So it is one that jumps back and forth. Yeah, it does, because it talks about her growing up, but it also jumps forward to 1969 when the guy is found dead. And so it's about this girl, Kaya Clark. Everybody knows her as the Marsh Girl, and she literally lives by herself out in the marshes. And she grows up by herself, I think from age six on, because her mother kind of abandons them, similar to yours. Over time, we understand why, and still, that's really difficult. And her dad is a monster, really. And all of her siblings just left. She did not know how to read. She raises herself. And there's like a couple of sweet people around that help her to survive. But for the most part, the people of the town, they make two feeble attempts to get her to come to school, but they are pretty rough and mean to her. And so like, she has no reason that she wants to go back. And so she just avoids them and they leave her alone. And so she Yeah, she raised herself, but in doing so, she really understands and learns all about the marshes. And so she's able to eventually contribute a lot to marsh science and nature study that way. Things that most people just had no idea about, she spent her entire life studying and observing. And so, yeah, it's a really, again, there's like a lot of heavy and hard stuff, but it's a really beautiful story.
Yes, I agree 100%. My number five is What the Wind Knows by Amy Harmon. And so this is a story of a woman named Anne Gallagher. She was raised by her grandfather and she loved his stories about Ireland. But anytime she mentions going there, he's like, no, we can't go there. I don't want you there. And she doesn't understand why.
Okay.
But when he dies, she goes there to spread his ashes. Basically, once she goes there, and I think she's out on the water spreading his ashes, and then she gets sucked into like a time, like time traveling, and she ends up in 1921. And that's a scary time in Ireland, which I loved learning about that in this book because I didn't know that what was going on. There's like a civil war going on in Ireland then. Yeah. So she basically is found in 1921 by this doctor, Dr. Thomas Smith, who is taking care of this little boy, but she is mistaken for the little boy's mother because the little boy's mother is actually her great-grandmother. So she looks like her great-grandmother, and the great-grandmother had like disappeared. And so they think she's come back. So the little boy is actually her grandfather.
Oh my gosh.
It's very good. I don't really have
time. That's so fun. That's cool.
And so that's why her grandpa didn't want her going back to Ireland because he knows that she's his granddaughter.
Okay.
That makes sense. It's very complicated.
It is complicated.
But I remember at the end thinking like one thing was going to happen. You know, she basically comes back to her regular time. And I'm like, this is going to be so sad and awful. And then it turns out really good. It's like all wrapped up in this like pretty box with a bow. And it's very delightfully.
I love that.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. And it's a little in the beginning, like my mom read it. Yeah, I had some other people in my life read it. And they're like, in the beginning, it was a little bit, you kind of have to get through the like stuff about Ireland. I'm like, just keep reading. Like, it's very, very good. So once you get past maybe like the first 20%, it really takes off. And this book I read. It's my eyes.
Okay. Yeah. With your eyes. Turning pages.
Yes. And I loved it. I loved it.
That sounds really good. I think I would love that too.
Yeah, especially if you like time travel, which I don't read much time travel, but and love stories. It was very good.
Okay. Here's an sorry. These are all like okay.
Heavy.
Yeah. Probably Where the Crawdads Sing is the least heavy. My number five is called The Escape Artist by Jonathan Friedland. It's the true story of Rudolf Virba, who was one of the first and only Jews to escape Auschwitz. And from the time he was a teenager, he'd always been kind of this escape artist, and he figured out how to escape Auschwitz. It was not easy. It was extremely difficult, very painful. And there was a lot involved in that because it wasn't a matter of just getting out of Auschwitz. It was a matter of getting out of a few different countries and crossing the Pyrenees and needing to trust people and watching people die. I mean, he wanted to get out and tell the world what was going on. You know, it wasn't this selfish move. Honestly, it wasn't just, I'm going to say myself. He was trying to tell people what was going on in Auschwitz. It didn't work. It didn't really go anywhere. That was extremely frustrating and very difficult, but he did everything that he conceivably could do. And his testimony did help for sure in the end, but definitely if people had acted on it, a lot of lives would have been saved. Although probably a lot more were saved than would have been if he had never gotten out and did his level best to spread the word. It also like dives into like all the post-traumatic stuff, you know, and how it was very difficult for him and in his later years and with his marriages. And they were a few because he was very traumatized. I don't know that we talk about that as much, just how it really affects anymore. We do talk about PTSD, but with those who survived the Holocaust or those who helped Jews or anything like that, they're extremely traumatized with all the stress and everything that they went through. And so it doesn't hold back. It talks about that a lot. But he was definitely a hero, an incredible person who risked everything.
That sounds hard. I was wanting to read this book, but I'm going to try again. I'm almost done with school for the semester, so maybe I'll try it again. But it's called One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich. So it's like this guy that's in prison. I started it and I read like 20% of it, and I need to do it again because I tried listening and I couldn't like follow it. And so I have the physical copy, so I think I want to read it. He's a Russian soldier who was captured by the Germans in 1945, and then he's in like a work prison. He receives a sentence of 10 years in a Siberian labor camp. And
oh gosh, okay.
Just like reading it is just like, I mean, what I did catch from it was like just awful. And so yeah, I do want to read it, but it's hard.
That's another thing, like so many people went from German camps to Russian gulags. It's like those people cannot catch a break. It's pretty awful. And especially you combine that with Siberia and the absolute freezing temperatures. Good grief.
Yeah. And he talks about how cold it is. And that just, you know, I don't like to be cold and I'm cold all the time. So
I know.
Really hard to read.
Yeah.
So my number four is The Quiet Tenant by Clémence Michelon. I think she's a French author. But I noticed when I looked these up again, it's funny how some books, I don't know if you feel like this, some books you need a refresher on like what happened.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
some books you're like, oh no, I remember exactly what happened here. But like this is a GMA pick. New York Best Times Crime Novel of the Year. National Bestseller. Anyways, like it just listed all these like awards and stuff. This woman came up with this idea during the pandemic because I went to like an author, like a book club where she talked. So,
oh, cool.
It was really cool. Like I listened to it one day and the next day this thing was on. So I watched it. But she was like, this whole like sheltering in place could cause problems for people that have other situations. And this situation is very awful. But this man had a woman that he'd kidnapped in a shed out in his backyard for years. Just kind of like, you remember the book Room where that woman is like captured and she's kept in this shed in the backyard. And then she has a little boy and then they escape.
Yeah.
It's like that. Okay. She never gets pregnant, but this man has her out in the shed. His wife, he has a wife and daughter in the house. Well, his wife dies. They live in this house that his in-laws own it. And they don't like him. So they're like, you have to move. So now he's like, what am I going to do? I've got this woman in the shed that I'm like keeping, you know, so what am I going to do? So he moves her into the house with his daughter and she's not allowed to like talk. Basically, she has this storyline that she's supposed to stick to. He keeps her tied up at night, like with handcuffs, and she basically becomes friends with his daughter. Mm-hmm. Kind of. I mean, she has to act normal. She has to like eat with them. He can't keep her hidden. Anyways, it's very interesting. So it's just how she basically escapes at the end. But
yeah.
And how he just keeps, like he tells her there's cameras on her and he'll know if she does anything. And it's amazing how people can control you with fear.
Absolutely.
You know, he wasn't as smart as he portrayed himself to be.
People usually are not.
Right.
It's an important thing to remember.
But it was really good. It was very tastefully, like there was no sex or description of that, right? It was very tastefully done. Like that wasn't the point of it. The point was like the control and how he like got her to stay. And so like all through the book, you're like, run, what are you doing? Why are you not telling somebody? Like, you know, he has this girlfriend and she like shows up at the house and then the lady answers the door. And so it's like, run, tell her that there's something going on.
Wow. My number four is another world. I've got a lot of World War II. This is The Postcard. And I've got a lot of true stories. So this is The Postcard by Anne Barest, who is also a French author. In fact, I believe this book was written in French and then was translated. It's a true story of her family. And that's one of the reasons I love it, is because she's telling her family story, because she and her mother like randomly received this postcard. And on the back of the postcard, it has the names of her maternal great-grandparents, Ephraim and Emma, and their children, Noemi and Jacques, who were all killed at Auschwitz. And she doesn't really know their story, but she, over many years, like she finds out their story. She finds out where the postcard came from. And that's kind of what started it all. It's a very difficult story to uncover. And she also talks about the difficulties that Jews still live with. Like Well, more recently, it's kind of become very apparent that there's a lot of issues. But before that, I was like, oh, no, like everybody's fine. No, they're not fine. Like Jews definitely undergo a lot of persecution, hate crimes. I mean, it's tough, man. And so she brings a lot of light to that. I just love how she dives so deep into her family history and finds out the stories of who she is and where she came from, because she was not a practicing Jew. But
right.
I think that this really like wakened her to how important that was to her family.
That was the book I was thinking of that I had not put on this list.
Okay. Yeah. Definitely need to put that on your list.
Yeah, the postcard. I'm going to list it right now because I totally read that. I know. Don't you think that you are like surprised? I don't know. Like the whole situation now, I'm really, and that book opened my eyes to like
yeah.
what things go through today. And it's like, I had no idea.
Yeah. It's important for us to know.
Yeah. That was a good one. So my number three is Unspeakable by Jessica Willis Fisher. And I remember talking about this one on the podcast for sure. So years ago, I really, really, really enjoyed this musical group called the Willis Clan. And they sing like Irish music and they sing folk music. They're very good, very talented. There was 12 kids. They were dancers. They all played different instruments and sang. And the oldest daughter, who's the one that wrote this book, was the composer and author. You know, she wrote all the music that they played. And just so talented. And they had a TV show that I just loved. I like lived for it. It was so, I don't know why. I don't know if I dreamed that my kids would be like this or what. I just thought it was fascinating that all these kids were so musically talented and like dedicated. And then it comes out later that the father was sexually abusing all of them. The girls, not the boys. Boys had no idea. But he was abusing them in other ways. Like,
sure.
Not sexually, but physically and for sure mentally. Anyway, so she finally, I mean, at the age of like 24, I think she breaks away from them and moves out. He has like total control over them. At the age of 24, she's not allowed to have a cell phone. It was crazy. And here she is like performing on stages all over the world, writing music, and yet not allowed to have a cell
phone. Can't have a cell phone. Well, and also what's shocking about that is the fact that she's performing all over the world. So you'd think she would sort of have her thumb on the pulse of what's happening in the world and be like, I'm 24. It's not okay that I can't have my own cell phone. You know what I'm saying? But maybe they were so within their own world. I don't know. That's crazy.
It took a boyfriend to like tell her. So she has this boyfriend that she's like, it was really interesting, but he's like, this is not okay.
Yeah.
He's like, your dad should not have this much control over you. And
yeah.
And the kids, it's really interesting how the younger kids were like, everybody kind of turned them against her because she was the rebel. And then it comes out that the dad was abusing all of the daughters. And so he's in prison forever.
Yeah, forever.
And the mom, I mean, I think she knew.
Yeah. I mean, how could she not?
But he was abusing her too. So
sure.
Like, so that's another book. That's the one I was talking about where it's like, I loved this book. But it's hard to say I loved this book because it was
Totally.
But
totally.
Fascinating.
Definitely. So my number three is The Rose Code by Kate Quinn. I loved this book so much. It's another World War II.
We know you love World War II.
We do love World War II. Oh my gosh. And I've read so many books about World War II. Okay. But this one is really cool because it tells the story of Bletchley Park in England, where the best minds in Britain trained to break German military codes. And it follows these three just very different girls, but who come together and are best friends. But it also kind of jumps back and forth in time because over time, two of the girls are very determined that one of the girls betrayed them. One of the girls is put in a psych ward. But there's somebody who's like getting away with spying, basically. And the girl in the psych ward knows who it is, or is pretty sure she knows who it is. But she's put away because she does. And so she needs her friends to come and basically get her out of the psych ward so that they can make sure that justice is done. It's a true story. I mean, the author has fictionalized these people, especially the leads, but they're based on true people, on real people. Some of them, she's like combined several real people from history into one character or whatever, but it's so good. These very brilliant minds who break codes. I mean, who knew? It's wonderful, wonderful book.
Yeah, you learn like, oh, I didn't know this was a thing. I didn't know people
Yeah.
did this. Kate Quinn is such a great writer.
So good.
My number two is, I don't know, this probably didn't make your list, but I know you read it this year. Running for My Life by Lopez Lamont.
Literally my number two.
God.
Awesome. So we can talk about it at the same time.
Yes, it was. I think a lot of times when books are like this, it's because they shock you when
Yeah.
you're like, I wasn't expecting that. It was so good. It's about, it says, it's not a story about Africa or track and field. Like,
No.
I mean, it's about this little boy who just like overcomes everything. He's kidnapped, right? And then taken into like,
Well, they were trying to put him into the military. So they literally take
yes.
him from his mother's arms. He's what, six?
And he's put into this camp, and they're just, do you remember like the, have to go to the bathroom and buckets and the tents, and I believe, oh, this, I don't even know how to describe this book. It was just so good. So he
It
ends up
was so
getting
good.
adopted as like and brought over here in that program. The description they gave on Amazon was not very long or helpful, but he's given a chance to come over here. Oh yeah, he writes that essay to apply to come to the United States,
Yeah.
and he gets help. Doesn't he get help from people?
To translate it and everything because he doesn't speak English.
And remember, like the boys would make him run like 20 miles and then he could come and play soccer with them.
Yeah, when he was at the refugee camp.
Yep. And so that's, isn't it? He loves soccer, but he's a really fast runner.
Yeah.
And so when he comes over here, he makes the, becomes a Nike sponsored athlete on the US Olympic team. Anyways, do you have anything to add? That was not a very good description of this
No,
book.
it was just wonderful. A couple of highlights for me is, first of all, how he got out of the little military camp to begin with. He's a 6-year-old boy. And these two or three kids that are older, they come to him and they're like, hey, we know you. We're from your village. He didn't recognize them. He didn't know their names. They literally rescued him. They got out of the camp. They ran what, like th for 3 days solid till they got to the Kenyan border. And once he was in the refugee camp, he never saw them again.
Yep,
And when
they
he
like
went back to
disappeared.
his village, nobody knew who he was talking about. That is an incredible story to me. It's very miraculous. And he calls them his three angels, and I believe that they were. Like it's very amazing. And then his adoptive family in the United States, they were just wonderful, wonderful people. And he had only been in the US for a few months before the terrorist attacks happened. And that kind of like rocked his world because he was like, oh, I'm in America. I don't have to worry about anything ever again. And his parents were like, no, you're still safe. It's going to be fine. But he did have to kind of compute that and figure that out. One other thing that I loved is just, he trained so hard and he ran so hard and did really well in his races. And his coach would be like, hey, just relax, it's going to be okay. And he's like, I'm fine. I'm not stressed about this. Like, he wouldn't stress about racing. He's like, this is fun. This is not something to stress about. Something to stress about is people trying to kill you, not, having to like bury your chicken so other kids won't take it. And so you won't have anything to eat. He had been through genuinely stressful things. He's like, this is not stressful. This is fun. I love that. I love that perspective.
Yeah,
So.
and at the end he does reunite with his mom,
Yeah, he sees his whole family in his village again.
and that was an incredible story,
Yeah.
him coming back there and seeing how they lived. And they had thought he was dead all these years, and the family that adopts him is just wonderful. And
They are.
you remember how they like he wanted to eat zebra before his races, and so the dad like makes him some kind of meat and says it's zebra.
Yeah, you find out it's bacon. He was eating bacon.
But it
Yep.
helped him with his races because he thought he was
It
eating a
did.
zebra.
It did.
That book was a huge surprise to me. Like it was so good.
Yeah.
I think we talked about this before. The cover is like not a great cover, and it doesn't look like it is, but 100% people should pick up this book.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's one that I did read to all of my kids because I was like, this is important. It really is. We need to talk about this. And they all really liked it. So.
So good. Okay, and so my number one is The Many Lives of Mama Love by Laura Love Harden. And I
Oh,
talk
yeah,
about
you
this, I
just
think,
talked about that.
last week.
Yeah.
So cool. good. It's about this soccer mom that lives in a suburban and she's a heroin addict, but she has a master's degree in English, I think. And she ends up getting arrested. And like, basically, I think they come in and arrest her and they leave her 3-year-old at home. And then they charge her
Oh,
with
goodness.
like, you know, they take the kid away based on that. And they're like, you came in and arrested me and then you left my 3-year-old. I that doesn't
Oh,
seem
gosh. No.
right. But
No.
anyways, she's in jail for 9 months and she really makes a difference in the jail. She helps the women there with, you know, writing letters and proposals or whatever appeals. She helps them solve their problems. It's interesting. She reads some book. Who's the guy that wrote the off the? I think it's Eckhart Tolle. She reads one of his books that Oprah had recommended, and it makes a huge difference for her. And so she's trying to live like he says to live. I think it was called like The Power of Now. It's the one that she reads. It was very, very good. And then once she gets out of prison or jail, it's really interesting in how hard the system makes it for them to recover and get their life back. The rest of her life, she feels like an imposter and like not being honest with people. And just when she starts to feel like she's not that person, then somebody finds out she was. Then she has to deal with it all over again. And she eventually gets to meet Oprah.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really, what a great story.
Yeah, she becomes a ghostwriter.
Okay.
And so she basically helps other people tell their stories. And that's how she ends up meeting Oprah. She had helped write a book and the book became a Oprah pick. And so she gets to go to New York and like meet her. And
that's
it's another
cool.
story of a woman who isn't going to accept how her life is and take things into her own hands and go with it.
Kind of a lot of redemption. So those are always wonderful stories to me. Okay, my number one pick is The Maid by Kimberly Cutter. If you look up The Maid, you'll probably immediately come to The Maid by Nita Prose, which is also a good book, but very, very different from this one. So this one is the story of Joan of Arc. And I think that this is my number one because I've always loved Joan of Arc. I've read a lot about her. I've read the court transcripts. It's sad, it's tragic, but very inspiring as well. So I really love this book because I believe that Kimberly Cutter really tries to humanize her and go, okay, what would the personality be like of a girl who would do what Joan did? This book is not for everybody. She tries to keep it pretty real in every way. And remember that this is 15th century France. It's pretty rough. And especially when dealing with an army full of men, you can imagine what she experienced and went through. So I love this little blurb from USA Today about the book. It says, was she a saint or a witch, a visionary or a madwoman, or an extraordinary peasant girl who, at God's bidding, led an army, saved France, and paid the price by burning alive? Kimberly Cutter's portrait of Jeanne as a strange, gritty teenage tomboy and true believer is compelling. And it is. I think some of the worst parts are when there's like these moments of hope that you're like, oh, there's people who are like, no, she's just a young girl. There's no reason to kill her as a witch or to do anything nasty to her. Like, let her go back to her family, you know, whatever. And you're like, okay, maybe she'll escape, but you know, she doesn't. But it was excellent. I thought it was very well written. It was a wonderful book.
When you said The Maid, I'm like, oh, not that one.
Well, the whole reason I came across this one was because I was looking for The Maid by Nita Prose. And of course, I had to put it on hold for like months. It was also an excellent book. I loved it. But so I came across this one. I was like, wait, it's about Joan of Arc. Yes, please. And so I actually ended up reading this one first. Loved it.
Do you think you'd be interested in it if you didn't know much about Joan of Arc?
I don't know that you would immediately be interested in it if you didn't know much about Joan of Arc. But if you want to know something about Joan of Arc, it is an incredible introduction.
I might try to read that. Sounds interesting. And I'm not very, like, my knowledge of history is very low. I need to read more stuff like that. But
yeah, I think it would be really helpful. Yeah, it's wonderful.
I'm super impressed with your knowledge of history. It's amazing.
Thank you. I love it. I love history.
That's awesome. Okay, so what are you reading right now?
Okay, well, speaking of history and speaking of World War II, I actually was reading this one aloud to Ken as we traveled many hours because we traveled many hours through Missouri and everything. A lot of driving. The fort where Addie is at is called Fort Leonard Wood, but most people call it Fort Lost in the Woods because it is literally at the middle of nowhere. So lots of hours. So we're reading Killing the Rising Sun by Bill O'Reilly. And anybody who's listened to us at all knows that I've read a lot of his Killing series. I love them. I recommend them highly. Great history books. So it's Bill O'Reilly and Martin Dugard. So this one is the Pacific side of World War II, which we don't have as much record of that. We know that it was huge and it happened. Most people just jump right to, oh, we bombed Hiroshima. You know, there was a lot that led up to that. And he dives into that. So it's the Pacific Theater and fighting the Japanese part of World War II. And it's so well written. It's excellent. And that's the side that both of my grandpas fought on. They were in the Pacific Theater.
I mean, is it hard to read aloud? Like, are his books, I've only listened to Killing Jesus, I think. Are they like,
oh, okay,
easy to listen to?
Very easy to listen to, I think. Okay. I think they're really, and he is actually the narrator, I think, of all of them. Yeah, I've enjoyed all of them. I bought several of the books because I just feel like they're really excellent history books. And so my kids have read several, and but this one, like I said, I read it aloud to Ken, and it was nice to read aloud too. It's very good.
So what I'm reading right now, I just finished it, was Blue Christmas by Mary Kay Andrews. And I know this episode is going to come out like after Christmas, but it'll just barely be after Christmas. So anyways, I think I can share it. It was a cute book. Like, I've heard on another podcast this week, this lady that was talking said her mom always buys Mary Kay Andrews Christmas books. So she must come up with a Christmas book every year. And I wanted to read her new one, but there was a wait. So there wasn't a wait on this one. And I just thought it was really cute. Just fluff, although not at the end, something big happens and it's kind of heartwarming. I mean, it's heartwarming, but fluffy and Christmassy. But it just like funny, quirky things happen. There's all these quirky people in the book and just some, I don't know. It's just cute. That's all I can say.
Kind of the perfect read for December. So,
and short, it was like 5 hours.
Okay.
I'm also reading right now. I'm in the middle of a book called Small. This book's only 2 hours long, and I've heard about it a couple of places, and so I wanted to try it. It's called Small Things Like These by Claire Keegan. It's set in 1985 in an Irish town, and this guy who was an orphan and was taken care of by this lady, he's now an adult and he's a coal merchant and he has a bunch of daughters and a wife. One morning while he's like delivering an order to a convent, the local convent, it says he makes a discovery which forces him to confront both his past and the complicit silences of a town controlled by the church. So I think that it's only 2 hours and I'm not done with it, but
yeah. Wow.
So far it's been really good.
A lot that happens in 2 hours.
It must be. Do you ever feel like when books are that short, like I pay attention because it's so short that if I'm not paying attention, there's not time to like figure out what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously.
When the book's really long, you can kind of like
catch up somehow. Yeah, totally.
I'm like, oh, I better back it up. I'm not sure what just happened and not much happened.
You miss anything, you might miss everything. So
yeah, so far that's been good too. And a little bit less fluffy than the Blue Christmas.
Yeah.
And I can't even, it's funny too, because I finished Blue Christmas, but I can't even really tell you what it's about. Like, she finds this blue pin, and then it goes missing, and then she figures out where it was, and I don't even know what to tell you. So don't read it.
But you enjoyed it, though.
It was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun. And I like stories that, like, the way this one ended. So she has this boyfriend, and there's a bag lady or like a homeless lady and she's leaving gifts for this homeless lady, and the homeless lady ends up being connected to her boyfriend. So I like stories like that where it's like,
yeah.
Oh
yeah. It is really neat. It's kind of satisfying when they do that. So
yeah, cool. I don't know. If you want to just waste a few hours, you can read that. Next week, we're going to do an episode where hopefully we announce what we're going to read for 2024. And then we'll start with the Moffitts on the second week of January. So
We're so happy you joined us for this episode. We hope you will join us next week as we discuss what we will be reading on our podcast in 2024. If you have suggestions for books we should read and discuss, please email us at thebestbookspodcast@gmail.com. We would love it if you would leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and share our podcast with your friends. We want to inspire and encourage as many people as we can to read out of the best books.
As Thoreau says, read the best books first, or you may not have a chance to read them at all. See you next week.